All right, so I'm excited for the fourth year in a row. We've got Bjarne here to talk to us about the keynote that you did here at CPPCon.
Yeah. Hi.
What is the topic of this year's talk?
Well, this year's talk was teaching and learning C++, especially modern C++. And I had to find something that I hadn't talked about the other years, and something I knew something about also, and something that was important for the community. And seems that I hit something that people liked and people were interested in. The comments afterwards, both on email and face to face, has been quite positive. I was a bit nervous. I mean, this is a bunch of developers, geeks, and
yes,
such, and you talk to them about education. I mean, lots of them are just happy to be out of university or wherever. But no, it seemed to work.
Yeah, one of the things I really enjoyed about the talk, which has already actually happened at the time when we're filming this, is that like there was this sort of call to action and this reminder that all of us in the audience sort of are teachers, right?
Oh, yes.
And regardless if we see ourselves, if that's a part of our identity as developers.
So, yeah, I mean, we're developers, we have junior colleagues, we have senior colleagues that teach us, that's why it's teaching and learning. We are mentors, we have mentors, we learn new systems, we teach our systems to others. It's deep, deep in our culture. Any well-operating development organization has endless sort of information flows among the developers.
Right.
And that was what I was thinking about.
And it's sort of like you've got this role that you play inside of your development organization, and then you have the same role that you kind of play in the community these days.
In the community too, and you know, there's also a lot of people here who really are full-time teachers, or part-time teachers like me.
Yes.
And then there are trainers that, mm-hmm. I mean, it's different from universities, and those people with questions about how they could help with their high school volunteering.
Yeah.
It's pretty universal.
Actually, let me introduce you really quick. This here, for those of you who don't know, is Gabriel Dos Reis. He's also on the Microsoft C++ team.
Yeah, and I've worked with Bjarne for a long time.
Yeah, can always recognize Gabby by the hat.
Yes,
we worked together in Texas for a while.
Yeah, so you mentioned earlier modern C++, and what is it, and why is it important?
Oh yes, one of the themes that ran through the talk was we have to teach modern C++. And so what is that? And I define it as the best use, the most effective use of whatever is the current standard. So it's different today than it was 3 years ago. It'll be different 3 years from now. So it's not one of these things like there was a book about modern mathematics, I think in 22, and people were still calling it modern mathematics when I was a student in the 60s.
You know, I could be offended, right?
Well, he was a Frenchman, but yes. But the point is, it is the current. But anyway, it's a good word. And so one of my points is that there's no such thing as value-neutral mm-hmm. teaching. You're always teaching values. You're teaching what's good, what's bad, what should be done, what should be avoided. That's a decision. And a lot of people don't make that decision. They just take what we've always done,
yes,
which is one of the most horrible phrases there is. This is not the way we do it here.
I
hate that.
Yeah, I definitely can say the C++ I started with in 95 is very different from the one I'm using today.
We've learned.
But at the time, when I started, Alex Stefanov's STL, it was just blew my mind. I was the aspiring mathematician at the time. Yeah. When I saw this thing coming out, I printed and studied at night. Yeah. So it was just beautiful. But then it's not exactly the same C++ today. Yeah. And so how do you get to know what you used to do is bad and it becomes good and becomes bad?
Yeah, it's good and bad are the wrong words. You're very right about that. It's really more like better and a bit dated. And a lot of people are still stuck in the sort of 80s or 90s, C-like stuff or Java-like stuff.
We're beyond that. You have to allocate some.
Yeah, yeah. News and malocs all over the place, error codes, all the ways so that you can forget to test.
Yeah.
As opposed to exceptions. Mm-hmm. And lots of sort of habits that people have developed that they don't even remember why they have done them. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is particularly bad when you have professors doing it in universities, so they produce hundreds of students with the same misconceptions every year.
Yes.
We need to get to the professors, we need to get to the courses. And that's how actually, to go back 2 years, that's why we launched the C++ core guidelines. Because that is an attempt to answer the question, what is good C++ now?
So one of the things that I've really come through for me in the last year is, you know, I think our penetration of people knowing about that is not yet quite where it needs to be.
That is
the core guidelines. Yeah. So I want to make sure that we, for the folks watching this, actually just give a real quick capsule summary about the purpose of that and what it is.
Okay. This came from some of us in different places, different continents, discovering that people wanted to know what modern C++ was. And there was wild disagreement about what it was. So I started to write some guidelines to be used by Morgan Stanley, and I found that my friends at Microsoft was writing some guidelines for how it should be done in Microsoft, and some people at CERN was writing about what it should be like at CERN, and there was more places than that, but that shows the breadth of the problem. And then we got together and write one of them, and this project is going on. We have a set of rules, mm-hmm. lots of them, some philosophical and high levels, give an intellectual framework around it, some detailed so that they are checkable, verifiable, and the point being that is defining modern C++ as we are doing it. It's not the whole standard, it is what we know works. We look at bug reports and bug listings to see what mistakes people do, and then we scratch our head vigorously until we find a rule that eliminates the problem,
right.
At least for most people. And since it's not the language but a guideline, people can choose which part of the rules they will live with. But for instance, we should initialize all variables.
Yes.
It's a very useful rule. It gets a lot of people out of trouble, even people who think they're too smart to get into trouble. They're the ones that actually caused most problems.
Yes.
And so it's very simple and it's verifiable. So there's a project, there's actually several projects to write verifiers of these rules so that instead of trying to learn all the rules, mm-hmm. my recommendation is to learn the intellectual framework, the philosophical rules, and then give your program to the checker, and it will tell you which rules you forgot.
Yeah.
Right.
In other words,
I think in your tools, actually have checkers.
Yeah.
Oh. Yes, in our checkers, the guidelines.
Yeah.
Principally worked on by Neil McIntosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Neil is working hard on that. I know.
So,
I've been supplying test cases.
Yes, yes, much appreciated.
So you said something that earlier that I probably want to get back to, which is that the guidelines are not the standard. And I think they cannot be the standard.
No, they shouldn't be.
So that sometimes gets lost, you know.
Yeah.
Some like me who made a mistake of learning C++ from the from the standard know that that's another way you want to learn how to write good C++. You need people or you know books like or guidelines to tell you how to write good C++.
One way of saying that is that stability, compatibility over a decade is a feature.
Mm-hmm.
When we improve the language, we don't want to break the old code.
Right.
Now, when we want to move the style up to get better performance, better reliability, better maintenance, we do want to break code. We want to take the old code and get rid of it. And this is one thing that I do work with a bit for real in my day job.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think a lot about it. And so The standard is very concerned with the ultimate generality and the ultimate compatibility of C++, whereas the guidelines are concerned with the best and simplest way of getting things done in C++ and how to get rid of the old sort of dark holes where right. people put their bugs. So it's a different thing.
Okay. So I wanted to go further. So you have education. Education is how you, of course, you have the current developers, but also the next generation,
yeah.
how you you build. You have some impacts on yes. how we practice programming, yeah. because programming has become so entrenched. And
yeah.
I was actually got news that some folks in Europe, like the Institute of Engineering Technology, gave you the Faraday Award.
Oh, yes.
Would you like to say something about that? And,
sure.
And explain to the audience what
it
is.
I mean,
I've read that it is, you know, based on the impacts on the society and the industry, the history of computing and nurturing C++.
Yeah,
they're
using some large words. So the IET is the oldest and possibly largest engineering professional organization on Earth. At least so they say, and I have no reason to disbelieve them. And it's not just computer science. It's not just, it's all engineering.
In the broad, yeah, awesome.
And in the broad, and so broad that they have people like Rutherford and J.J. Thompson, who got the award
yeah,
for things like discovering the electron.
Yeah, that's,
after
that's,
all, electrons are quite important for our industry.
Yes.
So I looked at this list. I'd never heard of the Faraday Medal. And I had heard about some of the ancestor organizations to the IET. But I looked at this and I looked at the list of people who had gotten it, and this was downright intimidating. You don't mess with J.J. Thompson. And for people who don't know physicists, we can list some of the physicists, Knuth, Maurice Wilks, what's his name with the quicksort?
Hoare,
Tony Hoare, and the guy I talked a lot with when I was a student in Cambridge. Not David Wheeler, the other one. I'm so bad with names.
I wasn't there, actually.
We'll look it up. We'll put it in there.
We'll put it in. Yes. Yes. There's only four computer scientists who's gotten it, so it's, the rest are engineers and physicists. But it's, I think it's a great acknowledgement of the contribution of C++ and the C++ community to the world at large.
Yeah.
You know, I always go on about the applications and how the applications are interesting, and Mars rovers and Higgs boson and fancy sports cars or whatever it is.
Right? So,
so you have, you know, you have guidelines for developers. That's the vast majority of people,
yeah.
and they need tools.
Yeah.
And you built this language tool. And what would be your advice in terms of education for aspiring language designers and you know, people who like to follow your footsteps? Because, you know, we still need to look ahead of and plan.
It's a question I get asked in many, many ways.
Sorry.
Often. and my first response to how do I use what should I do to write a programming language? And my first answer is, why? Or even worse, don't.
Won't work.
I know it won't work. The point is, it's what so many new computer scientists, hackers, game developers, and such really want to do. Mm-hmm. And the success rate is minuscule. So it is, for most people who try to build a programming language, it's sort of the failure of their career. And maybe they learn from the failure, and that's a good thing. But thinking that you built the next great programming language to be used by sort of everybody on Earth is setting yourself up for failure. And I don't think anybody with a reasonably sized ego would try that, because, I mean, it's just a failure.
So
my excuse, by the way, is I didn't mean to do it. I just okay. needed a tool,
so,
and
so,
I built
so
the tool.
So you failed miserably.
At that, as in so many other things. But once I had a tool and my friends depended on it, I had to improve it, because mm-hmm. otherwise yeah. I'd leave my friends in the lurch.
Right.
You can't do that. But the next thing is, what is the problem to be solved?
Yeah.
A language that is designed to solve a problem that needs solving and does it well succeeds. A language that is a Me Too language typically don't succeed unless it has a huge organization spending hundreds of millions of dollars getting there, and the average person who wants to write their own programming language don't have that.
Right.
So basically, be sure you solve a problem. And this is not original. Dennis Ritchie was the one that said, well, there's languages that are meant to solve a problem, and there's languages that are meant to make a point. I could point out that Nicholas Wirt was in the audience and had been saying something not very polite a bit before.
Okay. So basically, for aspiring language designers, don't get into different professions.
The first level, don't. Second level, what's the problem?
That's right.
And, you know, we have computer science, we have theory, we have practice, we have tools, that once you've gotten to the fact that what is the problem and how are the first order sort of ideas of how to solve it, we can solve it.
Okay. Yeah, so we have the guidelines, we have the checkers. What else do you believe will help with the education, you know, programmers?
We need time and patience to teach the professors. Teach the professors. You know, by definition, a professor knows everything.
Yes, that's what.
And you have
surprised.
To break through this. But this is not that simple. It's not that they're lazy. Partly, they have never practiced. Their previous job was student. So their view of what is important can be warped. Secondly, they are under pressure from deans and such. Uh-huh. To not waste time on learning things, because by definition they're a professor and they know everything. And so they don't get a time to experiment and to go and talk to industry and such. Yes, there's sabbaticals for that, but quite often that's not where it's focused.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're a professor, you are on top of the heap in your local environment. If you go in and try and learn something brand new, you're the novice.
Yes.
That's unpleasant.
Uncomfortable
for somebody who's used to having his joke always funny. And so we need to teach that. Mm-hmm. And also we have to make it easier to deploy things. Mm-hmm. We teach far too much how do you write a for loop and how do you initialize a variable. We should say, how do we animate something on a screen? And to do that, it's not that we don't have libraries that can do it, have systems that can do it. We have too many. We have, because we can't choose. We have no way of packaging it, shipping it, mm-hmm. installing it. As I said in my talk, I want to be able to say, get XYZ GUI library. Install get YZ GUI library. That's about as verbose as it should be. I separate the two because networking separated from what I can do locally. And then finally, I want modules, that's a language improvement, so that I can say import XYZ graphics or whatever is the module, and that should be it.
Nice.
Those are the three stages. Get it down from the web, get it installed so that I can use it in my code, import the SOGGR using modules. Gabby is the main worker on modules just now, so this is good stuff. And we need that way. People can start using things that are way above the level of the individual language. We don't want physicists to go around fiddling with malloc and single-dimensional arrays to do their n-dimensional computations. We want to say, get the n-dimensional array, install the n-dimensional array, A of 9, 10, 11, 13, boom, we do the stuff. that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
And that way we can actually teach better. We can teach not the how to find bug in horrible code, but how to use reasonable abstractions, reasonable and relevant to a particular person. The other set of users I'm very interested in is the sort of casual users, the people that are professionals in other fields. Mm-hmm. And they are the should not be left with the low-level facilities that are hardly good enough for
so
computer specialists.
That's a good segue into something I was meaning to ask, which is the language can always be improved, especially if you're into only language things, you can always find things to add. But what, in your view, I'm not asking you to make a prediction about what will be in C++20-something, but what, in your view, should the committee, standards committee, consider to improve and facilitate the lives of people using the language?
First of all, they should consider the larger community. The language is too expert-friendly because it's designed by experts to a very large extent for experts. That's wrong. It should be done by experts for a huge, diverse community, some of whom are experts and most of them aren't, at least not in language terms. So I think we are doing too many little things and not enough big things. I want concepts, of course. I want modules. I want simple static reflection. Simply to be able to loop over a data structure and do little things like generate object maps or serializers and such.
Okay.
And not much more than that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, people will devise their own dialects, and that's not good. But I think those three are probably the most important language facility things. Then I want better concurrency support. I want the then for the futures. We're getting the coroutines, right? We are getting the networking stuff, but I want better parallel algorithms and things like that.
Yeah, we have some because SIMD and other algorithms.
SIMD, yes.
Or do you think we need more?
I don't know. I don't know. I want SIMD, but how I want SIMD, do I want a SIMD vector or do I want SIMD-enabled algorithms? I think it would be nicer if we could get the SIMD-enabled algorithms because I don't really want to fiddle with SIMD because, but it's important. This is where performance goes like that rather than like that. So we have to do it. It's a question of when. Mm-hmm. But I thought I was covering when I said parallel algorithms.
Sure.
But we need to lift our coding away from threads and locks, which is the worst way of writing concurrent systems, and that's what we do 95% of the time, and that's wrong. It's a bug sync. I've had lots of success recently by simplifying things, making it higher level, and then finding it runs faster.
Yes.
People fiddling with little details, they just don't know how much time they waste. Write a nice, clean, high-level algorithm, concurrent, parallel, serial, I don't know, but clean.
Yes.
With not too many if and then and else's and buts and whatever. And the optimizer goes and out comes some very interesting code. I was just looking at the talk about constexpr functions, which is another piece that we did a few years ago. But how we use the compiler explorer, so you can actually see the effect of code.
Yes.
And I think that might help in the future, so people actually don't write ugly code and look at and assume it is faster.
Yeah. So people get
now they can write the code and see what it does.
They can leave zero abstraction penalty as
opposed
to just imagining.
And because we have so many experts in the community, I think the fact that people can very quickly go in now with Compiler Explorer and see the effect of their abstractions, I would have been skeptical now. Like, who's going to look at the output of the compiler, right? But actually, no. I mean, if you're in there and you're an expert and you're looking to write that best library, it can be very powerful, that feedback loop.
Right? Yeah, and, and, yeah, it helps with people being convinced that you can actually have program at a sufficiently high level of abstraction yet hit the middle with very few.
They just have to remember to turn on the optimizer.
Yes, you have to teach that.
Which is very, very opinionated. Novices sometimes forget.
Yes, that's right, folks. That was the, I guess, the other main takeaway from the talk. Dash O2.
Dash O2.
Yeah. So to wrap up, and so going back again to C++ 95 when I started, and C++ 2017, which we just got.
Yeah.
The C++ seems to have gone from some bad reputation. It's like, oh, you're going to copy, so don't copy. People write very, and then we can remove semantics and a bunch of compile time computation, which removes a lot of stuff. How do you see the future of C++, at least next? Now I'm asking you to take your crystal ball.
Okay, I mean, my explicit aim with the core guidelines is completely and guaranteed type safe and resource safe C++. And basically by default, don't fiddle around with pointers, have all dangling pointers detected. There should be a mode where all off overruns are impossible. That is optional because it may cost you about 5% if you do it, but certainly during debug and such. And for that, we don't need that many more language features. I want the concept so that I can write generic code that is reasonable. We have concepts that we,
but not exactly what we want.
Not exactly what I want. It's not as simple as much. I would like to see simpler code. Simpler code has fewer bugs in it. It's as simple as that. We're also going to go for the contract stuff to put runtime assertions in place if we mess up our designs. And so the type and resource safe thing is really the core of my thinking. And then simplification. Make simple things simple. I mean, we've been doing this again and again. Compile time programming simplifies a lot of messy stuff. Sometimes on the envelope, and then the constants go in, and 5 years later, it's the wrong constant. Now it can be in the code directly stating what it's supposed to do. We have simplified the loops, the parallel algorithms will simplify some of the major uses of stuff and save us from writing code. So that's the second part. Mm-hmm. So I say type and resource safety and simplicity.
Okay, great. Okay. So I think the call to action here is, of course, by all means, check out the keynote, which I'm guessing will be up by now. We'll have a link below. And then I guess it's go out and take those lessons and go and educate your coworkers.
And if you find something in the guidelines that look wrong or is missing, you'll know where to find us. It's on the GitHub. Everybody can see it. And our email addresses are known too.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.